Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. And a happy Halloween to everybody. More and on, spooky faces on Jupiter and such like. We'll get to them in a moment. And of course, I'm joined, as usual, by John Dixon.
John Dixon.
Good evening, John.
Good evening, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. Indeed. And as ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number for the next 27 and a half minutes is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. We'd love to hear from you, and just to let you know in advance, I believe this is our last 8 p.m. slot. From next week onwards, we will be broadcasting live from 7:30 p.m. Tuesday evening, so just a half an hour earlier than heretofore. So we'll start, as usual, with what to see in the sky this Halloween night. Actually, it's Dark Matter Day today as well.
Is it? Yeah.
We might get to Dark Matter later. But what to see in the sky, and we'll start with the planets, perhaps.
It's remarkable. The last number of nights have been pretty good, except for the night of the solar eclipse.
Yes, Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday. But the night before, with the full moon, almost full moon.
Yes, I saw that.
What a sight.
What a sight.
So what's that bright light shining in through the bedroom window? So we had to get up and have a look when I was raging the fridge as usual. 4 o'clock in the morning. Jupiter was up.
I wonder if there's anything left in your fridge at all.
Nothing at all, no. Not a thing. Not even enough for the cat. So there we go. So Mercury, unfortunately, is hidden in the glare of the sun at the moment. Venus is a brilliant... I was watching it the other night at about 4 o'clock in the morning. You could see Venus over to the left on the east and Jupiter over to the right.
And, yes, I saw that too.
Yeah, and -4.4 is Venus and -2.9 is Jupiter. So they're pretty bright, the pair of them. Mars, unfortunately, is out of sight behind the glare of the sun, and it's going to be out of the way for into early winter now. So I suppose we're in sort of nearly early winter now, but another 2-3 weeks again before we'd see it. So it's directly between, or should I say, the sun is directly between us and Mars at the moment. Jupiter is in Aries at the moment. Its opposition is on November the 2nd, which is in 2 days' time. It rises around sunset and, of course, dominates the east during evening and stands highest in the south around midnight. So 3 or 4 in the morning, it disappears off towards the west, where it disappears. And then we have... Saturn up there as well is quite easy to see as well. It's remarkable. It's quite dim as well, but it's still easily to see. It's that yellowish sort of coloured in the south in the evenings. Uranus, magnitude 5.6, Neptune 7.8, both the two difficult ones to see, but you can see them. And that's a challenge for you to see that as well. So Mercury in 4, unfortunately, is out of the way. Mars is out of the way. We have Jupiter, Venus, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. And Pluto's out there somewhere. Yep, but we don't follow it, unfortunately, because it's not a planet anymore.
Thank you, John. And, of course, we have the sun and the moon. And at the moment, there's an 89% waning gibbous moon, and it is currently above the horizon. But I don't think it's clear out there at the moment, if I'm not mistaken. You were in after me, John? Is it clear?
It's not clear, no.
No, it is raining.
Yeah, okay. It's raining.
But believe me, it is out there. And it will be due south at 3 a.m. tomorrow morning, when we will see just a little bit less of it. And by the time it sets... tomorrow afternoon at 20 past 12, it'll be down to 85% phase. And when it rises again tomorrow at 6:30, it'll be down to an 82% phase. So getting smaller and smaller, hence why we're calling it a waning moon, a waning gibbous moon, because it's greater than 50%. And it will be a 50% moon, of course, when we hit the third quarter, which will occur on Sunday the 5th. At 8:36 a.m. to be precise. Meanwhile, we have all put our clocks back, of course, by 1 hour on Sunday morning. And because of that, partially anyway, the sun rises tomorrow in Dublin, the 1st of November at 7:23 a.m. And local noon, when the sun passes the meridian and when it will be at its highest, will be at 8 minutes past 12. And it will set tomorrow, would you believe it? 4:53 p.m. in Dublin. Hard to believe. It just seems like only yesterday we had lovely long evenings. But there you go.
Left my place of work and it was dark.
Setting just before 5 p.m. And from that time until 5:30, we'll have civil twilight and then nautical twilight, which will end at 11 minutes past 6. And from then until about 10 to 7 or so, we will have astronomical twilight. So we'll have 28 minutes less daylight than we had a week ago. And tomorrow there'll be another 3 minutes and 51 seconds less daylight than today, when there'll be 9.5 hours between sunrise and sunset. It's only in a mere 6 weeks or so when we'll have the latest, that's what I look forward to, the latest, or the earliest, I should say, the earliest sunset. I think this year it's somewhere between the 10th and maybe the 13th of December. So after that, there'll be a little bit of a stretch in the evening. So it's not that far away. Of course, the mornings will be closing. I think the earliest, or the latest rather, sunrise would be around about the 28th of the month, or there or thereabouts. But of course, the shortest day of the year is the winter solstice, when there's less time between sunrise and sunset, the shortest, what we call the shortest day of the year.
I didn't mention that the International Space Station will be back in our skies on November the 18th, which is only 3 weeks away-ish, and it seems to be a little bit quicker this time for some reason. I don't know why. It took a long time to get up to September the 15th to October the 3rd, so look forward to November the 18th until December the 7th to see the International Space Station in our evening skies.
Yeah, well, if you're up tomorrow morning, it's 5:15. You see, it's assuming we have clear skies. Mm. It is undergoing a series of morning passes at the moment. And you did mention, John, Friday the 3rd, Jupiter is at opposition in Aries. It will be at 3.9825 AU distance. That's astronomical units. An astronomical unit being the average mean distance between the sun and the earth. So approximately 4 times that. And then on Monday the 6th, we have a little bit of a meteor shower. The torrids peaks then. You'll see some a few days. Well, of course, you can see meteors anytime. Some of them are random, and even the well-known meteor showers, you usually see them a few days before and a few days after. But the torrids will peak on Monday the 6th of November. Not the biggest shower of the year, but at least you have a greater chance that night than most nights of seeing a meteor. Assuming, of course, that the skies are clear.
Yeah, and with a bit of luck, they will be. Now, I caught this morning. It's a photograph that's beamed back from NASA's Juno probe. Now, it's well worth a little look on the internet.
And because
it. And if you look at the photograph, it has a really creepy face in the haunting Halloween photo by the Juno probe. So this... the spacecraft captured the ghoulish face on Jupiter during the recent flyby of the giant planet, giving us a nice Halloween treat. So, it's funny enough, it captured on September the 7th, but they've held it back, I would imagine. But it really is. It's something well worth looking at. It really has a twisted up, ghoulish face as well. So, there you go.
You made the eyes and the nose and the twisted mouth. Actually, when I saw it first, I was thinking of Picasso type painting is
slightly abstract. Reminds me of the album cover for King Crimson and the Court of the Crimson King, if you've ever heard of
it. Oh, you have me there now. I never heard.
Yeah, that's Greg Lake of Emerson, Lake and Palmer. So it's I have the album from way, way back. Yeah. I actually even have it on eight track.
When God Was a Boy.
Yeah, and a lot of people will be looking at each other and said,
what's an eight track?
I have loads of them.
Yeah, to play them on.
I have, yeah. I have about 200 of these things.
And do you play them?
I don't play them very often, though. I'm nearly afraid to at this stage, because you know the way that they used to wrap themselves up inside the machine?
Just like the cassette tapes, they get a bit of dirt on the pinch roller and they get stuck. We're going way off the point here now, but anyway, that's...
there we are. So the picture looks like the cover of the part of the Crimson Kingdom.
It is a bit spooky, all right, and very appropriate. Actually, if you look up the astronomy picture of the day, NASA's astronomy picture of the day from yesterday is very good, the Ghost Nebula, and there's another nebula in there as well. Actually, it looks like the Pac-Man Nebula to me. I'm not sure if it is, but I don't know if you've seen the Pac-Man Nebula. It looks like remember the Pac-Man that used to go across the screen.
Yeah, that's gobble, 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 gobble.
Yeah,
I was never really into those games at all.
Me neither. No.
Definitely. My eyes went wonky. Yeah, that's it. So, phone text line. What do you call it? The WhatsApp line as well. 087-179-1032. If you want to send us, say hi, or just want to just pass a message on of some sort. So, a little bit early to say whether which astronaut will command the UK Space Agency mission with Axiom Space. And looking like astronaut Tim Peake. Now, I've watched him on the TV over the last couple of weeks, and he's making noises, and the rumours are becoming stronger, and he's going to seemingly come out of retirement for the flight. The United Kingdom's possible space mission with Axiom Space is at too early a stage to speculate on the astronauts or the training involved. Not sure when this is going to launch. It doesn't say it, so they're going to announce probably shortly, I would imagine, once they do a little bit of training and do what they need to do to make sure that people are fit and well to travel back into space. So we can look forward to that and maybe seeing Tim Peake back in space, onto the space station. And I don't know whether you watched it. There was Heston Blumenthal. He's a chef, an extraordinary chef.
Oh, I've seen his program,
But he did a lot of it. It was about a two-year project to make the food for Tim Peake up in the International Space Station. And they tinned it, canned it. And they had rashers and sausages, and they had beef, and they had this, that, and the other. And I'm sure the lads beside them said, wow, can you give us a bit of that? No, this is for me. It's mine.
And they get rid of the smell of bacon inside the pressurized can.
Yeah,
can't,
brilliant.
Can't open the window.
No, you sure can. So, yeah, that was good fun as well. So, there we go. And we've a US-Russian Vulcan rocket. The Vulcan Centaur set to launch on December the 24th. That's Christmas Eve, which is a bit of an unusual evening to do that. So, and the payload, which will include a private lunar lander. And the mission is called CERT-1, so keep an eye out for that. It's also going to carry on board the cremated remains of several people associated with the original Star Trek series, including creator Gene Roddenberry and a cast member, Nichelle Nichols, who portrayed the character of Uhura.
Lieutenant.
Yeah, Lieutenant Uhura, so... Roddenberry's ashes have been launched into space before. So, liftoff is scheduled for December the 24th from the US Space Force launch base at Cape Canaveral. I'm going to be busy that evening. I've got to get to bed early, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Why?
Because there's a little fella in a red suit coming up shortly in the 57 sleeps or so, something like that.
Okay.
Telescopes and binoculars, we like them.
Good luck with that one, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. And we're also available live, of course, on the World Wide Web at dublincityfm.ie and as a podcast. Now, just to let you know very briefly, next week, something about the Euclid mission. You may recall, ESA's Euclid mission is designed to explore the composition and the evolution of the dark universe. And it's a space telescope, and its plan is to create the largest, most accurate 3D map of the universe across space and time by observing billions of galaxies out to 10 billion light years across more than a third of the sky. And Euclid will explore how the universe has expanded and how the large scale structure is distributed across mass, space and time, revealing more about the role of gravity and the nature of dark matter and dark energy. Well, next week, on Tuesday the 7th of November, at 1:15, you will be able to see some of the first 5 images from the telescope that the ESA are going to reveal on this broadcast next Tuesday. And so you can, if you want to see that, you can tune into the ESA Web TV directly or via the ESA YouTube live stream. And it's only less than 45 minutes, a 40-minute program, actually. And there'll be a live broadcast with experts, and they'll go through the 5 images, and they'll guide us through the images and tell us about the science within them. And then they'll be available later for you to look at in your own detail. And they promise to be, I suppose, really stunning pictures. And there's also a question and answer session as well, which you'll be able to join in if you so desire. And but this is a recent launch, as you may know, and the routine science observations will begin early next year, and the mission is planned to last 6 years. And there'll be big releases of the data on a yearly basis. And no doubt there'll be great images, and there'll be lots to learn, and we'll learn more about the evolution of the galaxy, as to say. In fact, and the universe, of course, dark matter and dark energy too. And you can follow ESA and Euclid on on the social media, between the Twitter and the Instagram and the Facebook. So, which I don't do any of them anymore, I have to say.
No, I never got into them, funny enough. We do it in here, of course, but it's, you can see the screen's live and changing every few seconds, and emails and all sorts of things. Anyway, bad news, I think, is coming for some of the Russian equipment on the International Space Station. And the Russian space boss has warned last Friday that most of the Russian equipment on the International Space Station was beyond its warranty. And this was weeks after the Russian segment sprang another coolant leak, which they've been out to try and fix. So they, what they did was they installed and checked the coolant system during their spacewalk as well. So things seem to be okay there as well. And their leak, Russia's third in less than a year, raised new questions about the reliability of the country's space program. And the officials have said that with no immediate danger at all, so that's a good sign as well. But the equipment itself has been, the mission itself has been extended to 2028, and seemingly at this stage it's already exceeded all permissible periods of existence. So they're saying that 80% of the Russian equipment is beyond the warranty period. And of course, Moscow's once pioneering space program has faced multiple setbacks since the collapse of the USSR, including the loss of the 2 Mars missions and its first lunar probe in almost 50 years this August as well. So things are not so good there, but I'm sure they'll come up with a cunning plan to get that back into operation and make sure everything's tickety-boo.
Thank you, John, for that now. A subject matter we've covered before, of course, the black hole at the center of our Milky Way galaxy. Now, there are new measurements which seem to pin down the mass of this black hole to 3 decimal places anyway. And they're saying this, this black hole has a mass of 4.297 million solar masses. So solar masses being about the mass of the sun. So if you can imagine 4,297 million suns crammed into a small space, again, if you think about the sun, which is over 330,000 times the mass of the earth, it's a lot of material.
Yeah.
And there's a instrument, a near infrared interferometer called Gravity, and what they've done is they've looked at Sagittarius A star, which is the black hole at the center of the Milky Way. And now these astronomers from the Max Planck Institute for Extraterrestrial Physics, they reckon they've pinned this mass down very accurately. And what they're doing is they're watching there are some clouds and gas and dust around it, and they can track the motions of it, and they all seem to be going in one direction, and the way they are swirling in, and from our point of view, a clockwise direction, I believe. And they said they can gather a lot of information from this about what's the mass of the black hole at the center and also the electromagnetic fields around it. But they've also, they're also saying these movements of these clouds of gas and dust, can, they can tell us a lot more about the black hole, and that it is, they've calculated that the limit where the event horizon is, and from that they can tell, from that and the mass, that it must be one black hole. You know, sometimes they come in pairs, black holes orbiting each other, but they say this is in such a small area or volume of space that it strengthens the case for a single black hole at the centre of the galaxy. And they have, hopefully with more study, they've studied this now over the past couple of years, and they hope that with more study they'll even be able to gain more information about the black hole and about its spin and its spin rate and lots more info besides.
Indeed. Now, just more news on the Chinese at the moment. Last Thursday, a fresh crew went up to the Chang'eong space station in the latest mission for a growing space program that plans to send people to the moon by 2030. So that's pretty exciting. It's not that far away, really. We're in 2023, rolling into 24. So the Shenzhou 17 blasted off from the Jiquan site in northwest China at 11:14, which was 40 minutes past 3 GMT last Thursday, carrying the three-astronaut team, with the youngest age averaging at just 38 years old. So it's an all-male crew this time. And hundreds of supporters waved the Chinese national flag and clutched yellow flowers and all that sort of stuff and cheered on the three astronauts. And from that, today, earlier on today, three Chinese astronauts safely returned to Earth after 5 months in orbit at the country's space station, their state media reported. The Jing Haiping, Zhu Yangzhu, and Gui Haishou. And if I pronounce them incorrectly, I can't help, because they're quite difficult. So it touched down at China's Dongfeng landing site at 11 minutes past midnight. Yeah, there we go. Yes. Just this morning, according to, you have to be careful when you're given the times. It was 8:11 a.m. over in China, and it was only just gone past midnight with us. So footage seemingly showed the return capsule parachuting down into the barren Gobi Desert, kicking up a cloud of orange dust as it hit the ground. And they had lots of experiments. So the new gang have lots of experiments to do. And they're going to perform various in-orbit space science and application payload tests with loads of experiments. And that doesn't tell us exactly an awful lot about. And with space debris increasing, their impact on long-term operating spacecraft is inevitable, though preliminary inspections have found that the solar wings of the space station had been hit by tiny space particles several times at this stage, causing minor damage, so that they have to see if they can fix that as well. So they have a list. I think they've list after list after list of little bits and pieces to do, which they've been probably training for months and months and months to get things there. So we'll keep an eye on that as it continues.
Thank you, John. Now, SpaceX, there's no stopping them, is there? Elon Musk's SpaceLink, they launched another 23 Starlink internet satellites into low Earth orbit from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida only yesterday. And that was its second attempt, because they had to, they originally planned to launch them on Sunday, but they had to abort that launch. But the second launch attempt was successful, and it was the eighth flight for the first stage boosters supporting this mission. And those first stage boosters previously launched Crew 5, GPS 3, Space Vehicle 6, Inmarsat 16, etc., etc., CRS 28, Intelsat G29, and two other Starlink missions. And the launch that was aborted on Sunday was just 30 seconds before liftoff. They decided to pull the plug on it after they detected an issue with the Falcon 9's rocket stage separation system. And the first stage, they landed on the drone ship, the one called Just Read the Instructions. I don't know where he gets the name from. The other one, I think, is called Of Course I Love You. Some names for drone ships, but there you go. And that happened just 9 minutes after the main rocket took off. and those Starlink satellites were deployed into low Earth orbit just about an hour, a little more than an hour after liftoff. Now, that means that to date, SpaceX has launched more than 5,000 Starlink satellites, and they have received approval to launch 7,500 satellites to expand the internet services around the world. And yesterday's launch was the 90th orbital mission for SpaceX in the last year, and they hope to make 100 flights by the end of this year and boost that number to 144 launches in 2024, which is nearly three launches every week. And how many satellites? Only 20, 30 on each one.
Yeah, thank goodness.
You won't be able to see the stars in the sky. It'll all be...
All the Starlinks.
All Starlinks coming, just bright lights going across the sky. Well, they'd be fairly dim. They are small, but still, if you're trying to do any astrophotography, for example, or any observing, all you get is streaks.
Streaks, yeah.
From them, yeah.
Mm. So this, I found this morning. It popped up in the bottom of my screen, and it said Boeing pencils. And I said, oh, yeah, I'd like one of them. But it's not Boeing pencils if you... scroll it up. It was just the first two words were Boeing pencils. So they were giving out Boeing pencils. Anyway, it's nothing to do with pencils. Boeing pencils in any time after April the 1st for its next crew flight test. So the Starliner team works at their mission control, and they're bringing Barry Butch Wilmore and Sunita Suni Williams to and from the International Space Station, which is going to happen sometime after April the 1st. And the timetables, there's not too much information yet on that, but it looks like nothing will happen before that. So we'll keep an eye on that for you as well. And one other thing, just before we go, it marks 25 years since Deep Space One kickstarted ion propulsion. So that was way back on October the 24th in 1998. NASA launched a Deep Space One spacecraft managed by the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. That's a great name for a place. Deep Space One served as a testbed for 12 new technologies, including solar electric, also known as ion propulsion. So it's been around for 25 years now at this stage. So technology has moved on a lot since then, I would imagine. So ion propulsion is one of the things that they're certainly looking at for future space flight.
Thank you, John, for that. I'm going to carry over for next week what I wanted to talk about carbon fiber space tanks, rockets, basically, for holding the fuel. New kind of technological discovery and design. Sounds a bit weird, holding your liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen and carbon fiber, but we'll get to that next week. That's my plan. Anyway, thank you, John, for your news items and for driving the sound desk this evening. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and thanks to are also due to James Sweeney and Conor Lennon for making the show available on astronomy.ie. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, from this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Bren Leinert with Threads. And at 11 p.m., Nigel Wood with Ear to the Globe and his World Music Mix. And from midnight to 2 a.m., we have Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues, and soul in a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at 7:30 p.m. next week, an hour earlier, or a half an hour earlier, I should say, 7:30 p.m., when we'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care, children. Thank you for listening, and say good night, John.
Good night, John.
Happy Halloween.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.